Hi, my name's Dan Seaman.
And I'm Jeremy Austin.
And welcome to the Perseen Podcast,
where we talk to industry experts and explore topics of interest to internet service providers and network experts everywhere.
Hello, and welcome back to episode 6 of the Perseen Podcast. I'm Dan Seaman, Chief Product Officer at Perseen.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Austin, our Senior Product Manager. Today, we have a special guest with us. We have Abby Hubler from TechWave. Abby, say hi.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. We got to meet Abby in person at WISP America, and we're going to actually talk a little bit about WISP America first before we get into some of the work that Abby's been doing and her history in the field. It's really fun to get to go to the shows and really put faces to the names. Every show, at least for the past few shows, we've been taking more of our staff. You know, Nathan Stook, who chairs the agenda committee, always says, bring as many people as you can, because you can't go to all the sessions yourself. The more people in your company who understand the value that can be got out of a WISP show, the better you are overall. And we definitely find that to be true. This year, we brought a couple of folks who may have been customer-facing in the past, but not necessarily customer-facing today. And we just find it to be really, really useful, you know, easily as useful as it is for ourselves. So Dan, what did you think about the show?
Yeah, it was good. It was... I mean, I think the thing that I took away from it, maybe as a couple other people on the vendor side said too, that it felt a little light. I don't know if that was, you know, there's a couple theories on that, like that the sessions were down a floor below. Did people not come up to the show floor as much, or it was a pretty big space? Maybe the hallways were wider and it just felt light, but it actually wasn't. But I don't know. It was still really good. I mean, we still had tons of existing customers and some new ones as well. So it was still awesome as always, but it just didn't feel quite as chaotic as other shows have.
I think there certainly were a lot of vendors in attendance, which, you know, speaks to the confidence that the industry has. Obviously, wireless it's still a growth field, you know, even though some of the bigger incumbents are encroaching on some of the smaller and local and regional operators' territory. What did you think, Abby, about that aspect? Because have you been to the show before as a vendor or just as an operator?
No, I've done both. I would say this is my second WISP America show. So compared to the one last year, it did seem lighter. So I agree with Dan on that. But I would say I actually had a better opportunity to network with other operators, which is always exciting. So I gained more value between the sessions than I did inside the sessions.
That's often the case. I tell people it's the conversations that you have and those relationships that you make that are going to be the bulk of the value. And I think this is my 8th year attending WISP America. I might have missed a year or two in there, but it's you know, when I look back at the friends that I made 8 years ago that I get to see year after year, it's really valuable. Those are really valuable relationships. And you know, I met Dan at a show.
Yeah, I heard that from a few customers too. That's saying that they've gone to enough of them now that the technical sessions, they kind of know that. Like, it's maybe a little different than a few years ago when there was still a lot of people kind of getting into the fixed wireless space. Now a lot of the people are there, they kind of know it. And some of those basic sessions, they aren't quite as valuable to them maybe. So yeah, I heard that from a bunch of people. But I mean, people seem generally happy with it. Like, I didn't hear anybody complaining.
Yeah, I didn't. I still met easily, you know, more than a few folks who were really starting up from scratch and preparing to start, or maybe had just started a WISP. You know, they still exist. So I don't want to forget that they exist. And you know, as well as the more mature operators, you know, those who maybe have gone through some mergers and acquisitions or just a lot of organic growth. And back to your point, Abby, about WISP America being a great show for conversation. Honestly, I really do like it better than Vegas because you just do have more time to talk, mm-hmm. and it's a little less frenetic. So I guess that's the flip side of it being quieter, Dan, is, well, at least the conversations that we have might get to be more meaningful. And
on two levels, though, like the problem with Vegas now, when the show used to be at the Rio, everyone was centralized. Now they disappear out into all the fun stuff that happens on the Vegas Strip. And this time there was kind of back to like the old shows. There was kind of like a central bar at night and everyone was there and it was packed and I got to see so many people. It was, I miss that about that show. That's just the Vegas show, that it just doesn't happen like that anymore.
Where you just run into people in the hallways. Yeah. Yeah. Some folks definitely shut down the bar a few nights at the Marriott in Louisville. Abby, did you get to see any more of Louisville than just the show?
You know, I didn't venture out as much as I know others did. I meant to do a bourbon tour and we just ran out of time, but I was able to go with one of my colleagues and go taste some bourbon. Mm-hmm. So it was fun. I feel like I definitely have to go back to Louisville, honestly, for some sort of a vacation with my partner soon. So we already have it on the books. Awesome. Trying to figure out when we can go back this year. Yeah.
If when you do plan it, my advice is, particularly for some of the maybe more picturesque distilleries that are outside of town, you know, maybe in Lexington and Frankfurt, you know, it's about an hour east of Louisville. It's book them early, because I made plans for, you know, whoever wanted to stay behind after the show from Adderlow to go on bourbon tours. And we weren't able to get all the places that we wanted because they're booked up months in advance in some cases. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite, your favorite tour, Dan?
What was the one, the first one we did, the one that was farther out?
Bullet.
Yeah. Yeah. Big distillery, very modern. Yeah. That was fun.
It very modern, you know, lots of automation, yeah. Big, fancy control rooms. And yet when you step onto the property, you still smell the smell brewing.
Yeah. 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 That was fun.
Another activity that we did at the show, those of us here at PCM, is we sponsored the Women of WISPA breakfast, which I think is in its third iteration. We started that a year ago at the last WISP America, and it's grown every time. I think we had over 100 attendees to this breakfast, which is saying a lot. Like, people have been up until 2 a.m., many of them, hanging out at the bars. And I think we started at, was it at 7?
It was at
7 a.m. And another thing that was interesting about it is that we had, I'm just off the top of my head, I'd say it was almost a third men, which is fantastic, because it's, you know, the Women of WISPA initiative is not just for women. It's to, you know, raise awareness and visibility and, you know, show the opportunities that women have in the WISPA industry. And men are a critical part of that too. Like, I'm glad that they're joining the conversation. The first show, it was Susan's husband, Al, and, you know, Susan's one of the founders, and myself, and Mike Wendy came and took some pictures for WISPA. So it's been really great to see the guys embrace that as well. And when you think about the numbers of how many people came to the show, it was, you know, what was it, over 1,200 at least, right? We had, you know, we probably had like one out of every 10 people came to the WISPA America, the Women of WISPA breakfast, which I thought was fantastic.
So you've been involved in helping to organize that as well, Abby, right? The Women of WISPA?
To a degree, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I've been privileged to work with Georgette and Susan. Consider myself an ally all the way when it comes to Women of WISPA, because it was something that we were lacking, honestly. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of amazing leaders on the show floor, but when you're a female walking around, you're like, oh, I feel like I'm just with a bunch of guys and I'm like, mm-hmm, the only female here. And the moment that we get them all in a room, it is so inspiring, honestly. And what I've appreciated about really incorporating Women of WISPA into the shows is it's another networking event. And this year we did speed dating, and we did a little bit of that, I want to say, at one of the other breakfasts. But this one was so unique because it gave us the opportunity to really chat about some big issues. You know, how are you inspired? What is it like to have women in the industry? What does it mean? And I sat at a few tables with guys as well, and it was interesting to hear their perspective, because you're not only hearing, yes, women can do a great job, but I had one colleague of mine spout off, they do a better job than I do. Like, I want these ladies in here. And it was really encouraging to hear that and also be able to network with each other. I met one of my really dear friends now through Women of WISPA at our first ever breakfast, and she and I have been kindred spirits ever since. So I love it. Can't wait to continue to back it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Thanks, Abby. And yeah, we're the same. We want to keep supporting that and hopefully grow that as well. In the fall in Vegas. So, but you've also been involved in other WISPA activities, Abby. Do you want to talk a little bit about the resurrection of the Best Practices Committee?
Absolutely. So, funny thing was, I would say the WISPA Palooza right before the first WOW breakfast, I went up to Claude and was like, Claude, I need to do something. I need to get involved. Which committee should I go work with? I considered education. I was looking at agenda. And he goes, Abby, I have this one that hasn't really come off the ground yet. You would be perfect for it. And I candidly had no idea what I was getting myself into.
That's how the best things happen, though. Because if you know what you're getting into, sometimes you wouldn't do it.
Oh, right. Yeah, Claude is an amazing marketer. I will give him that. I actually went up to him at the show and just had to sit there and go, what did you get me into? Mm-hmm. Honestly. But no, we decided that resurrecting the Best Practices Committee was very fitting, because a common conversation I've been having between shows is, how do we get more resources? There's a lot of resources at the shows. It's awesome. You get to network. But when we go back to our day-to-day operations, it's easy to forget about those resources or wait until the next show to really bring up an issue. So I had the privilege of working with Richard Bernhardt, and together we've built up this committee to really act as a community for different operators, vendors, to get together and talk about some of the big issues that come up in our industries. And honestly, Best Practices embraces a plethora of topics, you know, from operations to HR to tech to you name it, basically. And it's taken a year to get off the ground. We finally have a really great group of members who are starting to engage with us. And I'm hoping by the end of this quarter, not only will we have another deliverable to send out to everybody, which, side note, it'll be marketing and sales related. So I'm really jazzed about that. But we'll also be able to start getting into a better cadence of our communication, getting together, and hopefully be able to provide more than just one resource a quarter to our members.
So is the structure of that, like, is it kind of like subcommittee sort of like in different focus areas that are each producing, is it a document per area, or what's the outcome?
So based off the feedback of the members, initially that was the structure. Subcommittees, you know, everybody gets together based off of a certain topic and is able to produce a deliverable. But honestly, we're just way too busy for that. We've got businesses to run. We have fires to put out. It's completely understandable. So we're actually going to take a different approach to this and make it a more organic and passive form of communication, so that people can work a little bit more asynchronously and really encourage the collaboration when they're ready for it. So for example, we held our first committee meeting, and one of our members started talking about the documentation he's been making for his company so that processes aren't bottlenecked anymore. And we're all sitting there going, awesome, yes, that's great. And one of the other members goes, well, what do you write the topics about? And we started listing out different outlines of core topics and whether you would produce, say, a step-by-step how-to versus a video or screenshots. And one of the members goes, I bet we can make a deliverable off of that. I bet we could have a one-pager that tells you all the different topics you need for troubleshooting, for example, a local network. Let's also talk about outlines of how to create this documentation. How do you structure it accordingly so that your readers actually can take that information and utilize it? So our plan going forward, and Richard and I are going to start working with the board of directors on this. It's exciting. Just sent in the email yesterday, so you could kick this off. Is we'll be incorporating a collaboration tool to encourage that communication and allow people to, you know, flow as they feel their passions and their interests, you know, where they take them. So if somebody wants to talk about HR, hey, there's an HR channel, jump right in. If you have a problem, let's answer it. And from those organic conversations, we'll be able to pull out some different deliverables so that it doesn't feel as structured and as forced. Instead, it's another place for really like-minded individuals to get together and share knowledge and determine how that knowledge can then be shared with the rest of our community.
Yeah, this community is absolutely, an exemplar of what happens when you organically share what you have. And if you can capture that in a bottle, that's going to be fantastic. I mean, it's really great to see this committee get back off the ground. Since it really had kind of a false start a number of years ago and just had no deliverables that I'm aware of. And yet it's something that the industry really needs. So, excuse me. So thank you for working on that. So what would be the best way that, you know, our listeners can, get involved, and how can they reach you on this, Abby?
So I would say easiest ways are either reaching out to me via email. So abby@techwave, TechWave.com, or you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. Either way, I'm pretty responsive on both of those platforms. Really, what I need to know is, what do you want to talk about? What are your interests? Are you someone who is obsessed with processes and procedures and documentation? Do you want to provide feedback on how to hire really good people? Or are you looking for information about how to grow your company? You know, we're here to help you out. And at the very least, I can give you another tool that you can utilize if you're not ready to, say, make the leap and start providing feedback and helping out other users.
Fantastic.
And Jeremy, you've been involved in the education committee in the past. Can you maybe between the two of you explain for me, who's a little bit outside, what the intersection of these two things are, or what it was and what it's going to be going forward?
Yeah. So the education committee is essentially joining forces with best practices. We really don't see that there needs to be two separate committees that are involved in some of the same activities. Now, education historically has also had some outreach activities outside of WISPA that you might consider a little bit more like marketing, both, you know, kind of outreach to potential members. And then, you know, we produced quite a lot of content, particularly during COVID, sometimes as much as one, like a webinar a month on things that our members needed to know, or in some cases, they were public information as well. And the need for that has lessened. You know, people are a little bit webinared out, and it's time for there to be a little more organic kind of bottom-up approach that Abby's taking. So yes, that's going to be happening. And at some point, there'll be an official announcement from WISPA, I believe, that it'll be best practices in education going forward. But I started just talking about best practices because that announcement hasn't been officially made yet. Abby's smiling. But I think we have a pretty good idea of what that framework's going to look like. We don't really have any major ongoing initiatives in the education committee. I think maybe the one that's sort of a loose end that we're figuring out is like where Women of WISPA fits into WISPA structure. Since that originally had kind of been a outreach activity of the education committee, Georgette was a major founder of that, and she was involved in both committees. So once we wrap up that loose end and figure out how WISPA can best support Women of WISPA, then I think we'll expect to see an announcement from, or at least a clarification from the board, or from David. David Zumwalt is the current president. So that was really fun to get to talk to Abby about that at the show. I'm really excited to see, you know, WISPA's volunteer activities not ceasing, you know, volunteer involvement in the community, I mean. So any comments about that, Abby?
I would say I really appreciate the support that we have with the board of directors and David as the president, because it takes time and there's red tape and, you know, there's some hoops to jump through to get everything in the way you want to. I've felt an extreme amount of support, which has been great. So when, you know, I had the chance to talk with David after we were starting to talk about this, Jeremy, he was all on board. He's like, this is exciting. We need this. This is the next chapter for WISPA. So I think there's just this sense of it's time to continue to evolve the association with the needs of our members. And we are ready to hear the feedback. I think that's the most exciting part for me out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to what you said about Claude, the previous president, and his salesmanship, you know, I had really enjoyed building up the education community, you know, sometimes with Claude's help there. And you know, just said we did quite a bit of work during COVID in particular. And at this point, after four, I think it's been 4 years or so, I really no longer have the time to devote to it. And I don't like to do something badly. So it seems like a natural organic transition, given that you're doing such a great job getting best practices off the ground. It's really exciting to see. So I think with that, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We've got a special guest with us today, Abby Hubler from TechWave. Abby, we were talking during the break, actually, about our history in tech and how we got into this. So why don't you ask us the same questions that you asked a minute ago?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious how y'all got into telecommunications. This is not usually an industry that people honestly wake up one day and go, oh my God, I want to start a WISP. So how did the two of you get into this?
Dan, sure, I can go first. So I kind of have the prototypical, I don't know, farm kid needs better internet story. So I grew up on a farm. There was no way I was going to get decent internet anywhere. Even the towns nearby didn't have internet. So I started an ISP a long, long, long time ago, still in the dial-up days, and then ended up doing some fixed wireless and stuff later. Yeah. Needed internet, created a company to get better internet is pretty much the history of that. And then after that, after I'd sold that company, then I ended up working for product companies selling to internet service providers, and then eventually Outerlo now. So Yeah.
So you've been in at least internet adjacent pretty much your entire career.
Oh yeah. 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 Pre-career. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I have a similar story. I also was a farm kid and had no internet, but on the other side of the border in rural Southeast Alaska. And in my case, there really weren't any options. I was not able to do anything, as a teenager, other than experience very, very bad dial-up over 900 megahertz wireless extenders. After I went to college, I kind of took a slightly different path in that I more or less started, I kind of inherited the operational side of a rural telco. And at that point, there really wasn't any internet other than, I guess there were external dial-up providers, but there wasn't anything internal. So this was in the late 90s. This was about 98, 99. So what I started doing was turning that telco into an ISP, started adding DSL, kind of the first way to reuse your existing copper that's in the ground. And then, I think by 2000 and 2001, started adding fixed wireless into that mix because the amount of bandwidth you could get over wireless was so much more than you could do over a wire for certain distances, and then eventually adding fiber. So really I took that telco kind of rapidly in about less than 20 years, but I was involved in it for 20 years total, kind of through all of the stages from 60s era copper technologies on through to like 80s era digital switching. And then, eventually all the way to completely to fiber. That to ISP and telco has no more active copper in the ground. I'm very proud of that. It took a long time, but that's the case today. There's no more active copper between buildings. So that really got me a whole lot of experience in just all the different technologies and in the operational side of providing internet to people. Because at a certain point, voice just became one more activity, one more application on that network. And it no longer made sense to have two separate networks. We still kind of have that today in that we have like mobile and terrestrial, but even in the mobile base, those operators are doing fixed wireless. So the lines are very blurry there. There's now like a single network in many, many parts of the US. So from there, I kind of pivoted more once I had spent a good deal of time on the operational side, I began to get more heavily into just pure network engineering. So for about the last 5 years or so that I was running the telco, I was really calling myself a network engineer, whereas I hadn't done that before. I did bits of network engineering and I had a hand in all the different technologies, but I kind of learned the bare minimum necessary to make those things work. And then went to work for a large regional provider in Alaska. There are two or three of providers that kind of have the bulk of the state. In this case, I went to work for the second largest ISP, about 500 or 600 employees. So a pretty big organization, lots of fiber, undersea fiber. And I did that for a couple of years. But like Dan, I really was working on the product side. Even though my title was engineering, I was largely working on product. So that made it kind of a natural transition to product at Preseem, where what we do is software engineering for ISPs. So all those years of history in the ISP space became really useful. How about yourself, Abby? Cool.
So mine's a little unconventional. So I grew up in Silicon Valley and I was obsessed with technology. Like, didn't know what I wanted to do, thought about going into computer science or computer engineering. And my dad was just pushing it. He's like, whatever opportunities, let's get them for you. And I started doing some computer repair work and IT work. I ended up moving for college. And the first job I could find was working, first at GameStop, because I am also into video games. And then there was a local computer repair shop. And I was like, huh, I bet I can do this. So I learned how to solder and fix iPhones and fix any sort of hardware or software. And, honestly, in that business, the culture just was very toxic. So I was looking for another opportunity. And lo and behold, I find a WISP in my small town where I'm going to college. They're called Oasis Technology, and they're still around today, flourishing. And I started in their computer repair shop. And then it turned into, well, I'm bored. I'm tired of soldering things and just removing viruses. And they're like, why don't you get on the phones and do troubleshooting? Great. So I did that for, I want to say it was about 2.5 years. I worked for Oasis, loved it, ended up graduating from college there, looking at a university in Las Vegas, and like, I might as well stay in the WISP industry. So I found the largest WISP in Las Vegas, LV.net, and same sort of thing, started at the bottom and just worked my way up. I started as the executive assistant to the CEO and worked myself from that to managing their 24/7 customer service team, to taking on sales and marketing, to working on business analysis. And then I ended my role there as their strategy manager, working with their chief strategy officer. And that gave me such a taste for operations that I just couldn't stop wanting to find ways to improve the company, honestly. And I took a little break from the WISP world somewhat by working for Minim for a period of time. But it was great because I didn't lose touch with the WISP side of things. I got to still interact with some awesome WISPs throughout the country. I understood the issues that they went through because I'd been in their shoes before. So understanding the dynamic of the customer journey from the moment they want your service to, you know, them being a recurring customer that's paying their bills each month, that's quite a journey. And if there's a gap somewhere and it was caused by Minim, I knew I needed to solve it. So it was exciting. And then similar to you guys, there was this concept of, we need another internet service provider in Manchester, New Hampshire. And a colleague of mine came to me and said, do you want to go start a WISP together? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. This sounds like a great idea. What could go wrong? And then I go to my first WISPapalooza representing that company. And JJ McGrath, my now boss at TechWave, pulls me aside and goes, oh, that is the last thing you should be doing. I'll help you, but don't do this, but I'll help you. And he helped me to really grow in my knowledge of operating WISP from a higher level. So operating it from more of a strategic mindset of, what is the vision and where do we want to take this company besides just putting out fires and figuring out how operationally we have a better workflow throughout the different departments. And he ended up, when I came back on the market, was like, you need to come on board and help me fix my company. We're ready for the opportunity to grow. We can't keep operating like we're a small little startup that only has 100 subs. We're at the cusp. I'm hoping by the end of this week, we're at 2000 subs.
Fantastic.
So he was ready for that change. And as much as, you know, telecom can be, you know, ups and downs, you get no's, you'll get declines, sometimes you struggle with the growth. It's such an exciting industry to be in because of all the constant innovations we get to play with, whether it's like new software tools or new hardware. It's such a fun industry to be in.
So let's talk about that, like that operational mindset a little bit. Because, you know, when you do have 100 subs, you know, I've run all kinds, right? From the very small to the, you know, had a hand in running the very large. And what is it specifically like for those of our listeners who don't, you know, maybe they don't have a formal operations manager or an operational department? Like, what is it in your mind that distinguishes an operator? I mean, since you've had this chance to kind of be effective at TechWave to improve the operations, what are kind of like the core principles that distinguish an ISP or a company that's not managing it well from one that is managing operations well?
So what I focused on with TechWave was the people side. People are your resource. If you don't have your people engaged, feeling valued, feeling safe, and feeling heard, you're not going to be able to grow. You're going to be a one-man show. And for some operators, that works for them to have a smaller organization. In the case of TechWave and the other businesses that I worked in, making sure that your people are happy can be a challenge. And if you don't set the right expectations, if you don't have the right people in the right seats, or at least even the right people involved, you're going to have issues actually operating your business. And by that, I mean pushing through the processes. Say a customer calls in, wants to make a payment, and the person taking the phone call doesn't know how to do it. Now we're frustrating the customer. Now it's affecting our reputation. We're having issues. Now there's the thought of, anytime I call this company, they're not going to know what they're doing because I had this issue. In reality, that person on the phone might just have not learned the process. They just weren't trained it and they don't know who to ask to learn. So from my perspective with operations, I do put a heavy focus on people. And honestly, with TechWave, once we incorporated what our core values were, they were clearly defined. We determined how our core values translated into our culture. We were able to change the way our teams were formulated, improve our communication. And then instead of having this reactive mindset constantly, we understand we have to put out the fires. But as we're putting them out, we're thinking about how do we stop them from happening at all instead. So we work more collectively as a team instead of just individual contributors.
And what was that process like, figuring out the core values and stuff?
Oh, goodness. It was a challenge. And by challenge, I mean, it was understanding how JJ as a CEO wanted the business to operate. So he and I sat down and we first talked about how do we want people to be if they're within our company. So they show up early before their shift. They take the initiative. We want people who understand that when mistakes happen, it's okay. And we need to find ways to mitigate that mistake from happening in the future. So he and I really started off by thinking about what did we want TechWave to be and what did we want it to represent? Instead of nitpicking what was already there, it was focusing on where should it be in the future. So ultimately, we came down to 6 different core values. And my favorite of them is honestly, we're innovative because we're constantly finding new ways to help our customers. We're in rural Texas. It's not as easy as just setting up a radio sometimes. In certain cases, it's setting up a tower and making sure that customer can connect and connecting a whole community. So that concept of first looking at what we wanted, documenting it, and then determining where we saw it in our current organization helped us to not only feel like it was real and we weren't just saying, oh, it'd be nice if we acted this way. We were able to look at our leadership team and go, you guys are already doing this. We just need to refine the edges of just a little bit and direct you guys to keep going.
Mm-hmm. I think some of the books behind that I have there talk about the culture stuff. And it kind of, there's just the way that you said it, of kind of doing it, figuring out what you want it to be first. Some of the other approaches are you got to document what's there first. It's interesting to see which angle's taken there. So cool.
I can see how sometimes it might be discouraging when you look at maybe some corporate dysfunction and say, well, we need to tweak it so that we can fix that dysfunction. And sometimes perhaps dwelling on the positive aspects of saying, well, here's where we want to be, rather than cast condemnation on the way they are, they will provide this aspirational goal where you can say, hey, this isn't aligned yet with where we want to be. And, maybe provide positive reinforcement rather than negative reinforcement. That's just my theory.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, the only time that gets hard is if someone obviously doesn't fit after you've decided that. And hopefully there wasn't any situations that were unrecoverable from that.
I was thinking something similar. And where I think it leads into is setting the right expectations. Because how am I supposed to hold somebody accountable if they don't even know what they're supposed to be doing?
Right.
They might think they're the right person. And I haven't led them to believe otherwise. But, behind the curtain, I'm frustrated because they're not doing the job the way I, in my head, think it should be done. Mm-hmm. So that was another element that we had to incorporate before determining, do we have the right people in the right seats? Were they actually set up for success? Because in most cases, they weren't, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, in TechWave's case, I found we had an issue with the way our management team was running the departments. So management team was frustrated. In turn, their employees were frustrated. And it was just this chaotic mess that needed to be dealt with. And I kid you not, it took a while. I came in towards the end of the spring, and by Wispapalooza of 2022, we were finally in the right spot. It took a while. But what I will say is it has to be a joint effort. And I know there are some organizations out there where it's this one manager, and I was in that role. You're like, I got to make a change. How do I do it? Start small, but you're going to have other buy-in, honestly. I'm fortunate. Our CEO, JJ, is phenomenal. I know I drive him crazy sometimes with the things I want to implement. But at the end of the day, he and I have to be a uniform front so that the team can see that we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. And I want to ask about JJ as well, because I've been seeing him doing a lot more advocacy on behalf of WISPs and what's going on there. I know you've had some RDOF funding and you've got, projects that you're working on strategically, but I think I've seen that growth in JJ as well. I've known him, quite a while. Can you talk a little bit about, kind of at a high level here, what's going on there, what your needs are as a company and how that fits into what WISPs at the state level and at the national level need to be doing right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So TechWave's mission is ultimately to be able to provide connectivity to those who are unserved and underserved through innovation and advocacy. That's something that is the epitome of TechWave. And JJ makes that known in every effort he does. So a concept that he has been really working on is how do we set up, the local governments as well as the federal government with the knowledge so that we can make some really good decisions when we're trying to organize financials. So when you're issuing, say, a grant and you have a winner of said grant, can they actually provide what you want them to provide? Is it feasible? We learned that with RDOF. We learned that really hard of it's a great idea, but honestly, with the way that it was set up, it's not something feasible for us. It might be feasible for other operators, but for a smaller operator trying to branch into fiber and other technologies, it's been a little bit challenging. So in JJ's mindset, it's thinking about how do we give voice to the operators that can't sit there at the platform and talk for themselves. He works particularly in Texas. He is our state coordinator through WISPA, and he works with other Texas operators to educate different political members on what they need to know regarding internet. So as a big topic that we talk about all the time, do you need a gig or are you okay with 100 by 20, and why it is that way, right? And how do we continue to, you know, talk about that? And it will change, but I don't need to give my subscribers a gig right now when they're perfectly happy with 20 megabits per second. So right. In with regard to his advocacy, it's a constant task that he is working on. What I appreciate that he's taught me in this is you just need to know. You need to realize that there are people working really hard to advocate for you. So make sure that you know who's advocating for you and see if there's any way that you can contribute, even if that's taking what they're advancing and applying it when you're doing grant writing or you're applying for certain opportunities or awards. And then also determining if there's a way that you can also contribute. So if they're going to DC, do you want to buy that plane ticket and be at that table with them as well?
Yeah, you got to show up. Absolutely. And I think that's something that maybe not as many WISPs are aware of, is that there likely is a state coordinator for your state to kind of put a plug in for another WISPA volunteer committee. You know, with JJ in Texas, you know, I can't think of somebody better to represent Texas, you know, and there are many really fine WISPs in Texas. We have a lot of friendly customers there, and it's always great to we got to go do another road trip soon, Dan. And that, yeah, I'm just going to put a plug in there. If you aren't involved in, or at least staying aware of what's going on at the state level, you know, to put a kind of a local spin on it here with the BEAD funding, the NTIA seems to think that the states are going to have a lot of power with this round of funding. And so even though you may think there's no opportunity in it for me as a WISP, there really may be. And it won't happen unless you show up. Thanks for that. Thanks for that that notification, Abby. Yeah, JJ is doing a great job of that. We've come to the end of our topic list. Is there anything else that you, Dan, or you, Abby, want to chat about before we wrap up?
No, I don't think I can think of anything right now. I probably will 5 minutes after we end.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think same for me. But yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. This is an honor to be included.
Thank you for coming on. It's really great. I think this is going to be a really a fun listen. It's certainly been fun to chat. If you have any questions about the show, you can email us. I'm jeremy@preseam.com. Dan's dan@preseam.com. And our guest today, Abby, is Abby, that's ABBI, at techwave.com. That's TEKWAV.com. The website for this podcast is preseam.com/podcast. You can also subscribe to us on Spotify or in Apple Podcasts to get regular updates when new episodes drop. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.